Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Moscowane. If you're not having fun, you're not fully living. That's the idea behind a new book by award-winning science journalist Catherine Price. For many of us, fun, using air quotes here, can be elusive or worse, an indulgence reserved for when we have so-called free time, which we rarely have. And yet, Price says that fun, true fun, is essential to our mental and physical well-being, and we ignore it at our peril. If the name Catherine Price sounds familiar, it's because you may remember her previous books, the hugely popular How to Break Up with Your Phone and Vitamania, How Vitamins Revolutionize the Way We Think About Food. Catherine Price is based in Philadelphia and is also the creator of ScreenLifeBalance.com, an online resource dedicated to helping people scroll less and live more. Her work has appeared in numerous publications, including Popular Science, O, the Oprah Magazine, Slate, and the New York Times, which likes to call her the Marie Kondo of brains. Catherine Price, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you so much. I like the idea that they're just constantly referring to me as the Marie Kondo of brains.
I'm sure that's what they're doing in the newsroom or the New York Times.
All the time.
So, Catherine, you're a science writer. What led you to write a book about fun?
Well, I like to turn my personal issues into my professional projects. And so that's what happened with my last book, How to Break Up with Your Phone, where I had a moment with my daughter when she was a baby, when I was feeding her late one night, and I realized that she was looking up at me and I was looking down at my phone at doorknobs on eBay, which is like, I don't know if that's better or worse than social media, but it's bad. And in that moment, I realized I needed to change, and I realized that there weren't really solutions out there. And that's what led me to write How to Break Up with Your Phone. And the same thing happened with this book. I had this realization when I was taking a break from my phone that I had this free time in front of me and I could do whatever I wanted to with it, but I actually couldn't think of anything that I wanted to do because I'd gotten so used to filling my time with just stuff on my phone that I'd lost sight of how I wanted to fill it. So that piqued my curiosity also. I wanted to figure out how to feel alive again myself. And then I got very interested in the concept of fun and what fun actually is. And then the science journalist in me got activated, and then here we are a couple of years later with this new book.
So what is fun as you define it? Because you make a distinction between true fun and fake fun.
Yes, it seems like it should be an easy question to answer. But what I discovered when I started looking into it is that there aren't really very good definitions of fun. So I should back up and say that what ended up happening when I freaked out and realized I didn't know how I wanted to fill my own time is that I asked myself this question that I had been posing to people when they helped me research How to Break Up with Your Phone. And the question was, what's something you say you want to do, but you supposedly don't have time for? I'd asked this to thousands of other people, but I hadn't asked myself. So I was sitting on my couch and just ruminating, and I asked myself that question, and my answer was, I think I want to learn how to play guitar, because I've played piano since I was a kid, and I had this guitar that my grandmother gave me money for in college. She played the guitar. I was really close with her. I kind of felt guilty that I'd never learned to play this guitar. And so I decided that I would take a class, and I ended up looking online and I found this studio, which people in Philadelphia is called Mr. John's Music. And I signed up for this adult, it's a children's music studio, but I signed up for an adult guitar class, which met on Wednesday nights. And before long, I started to notice that when I was in the class, I had this feeling of freedom and exuberance and lightheartedness that didn't just light me up in the moment, but it lingered afterwards. I just felt this feeling of liveliness that had, even though I'm a happy person and I have a wonderful life, I just hadn't felt this particular feeling in such an intense level of intensity before. And when I thought about what word would describe that feeling, the word that came to mind was fun. But when I looked up fun in the dictionary, the definition didn't match that. It was lighthearted pleasure or just, you know, enjoyment. And yeah, that was true, but there was something much deeper going on. And that's why I realized I needed to come up with a better definition. So to answer your question, the definition I came up with is that fun, or true fun, as I call it, is the confluence of three factors: playfulness, connection, and flow.
Playfulness, connection, and flow. So let's break that down a little bit, because the playfulness idea, I would think, might be a tough sell for some who think of playfulness as childishness or being unproductive or being silly or something that feels, I don't know, not quite who they are.
Yeah, I was trying to watch your body language as I said that, because a lot of adults, when you say playfulness, they keep a smile on their face and you could just feel them clenching up inside. So I don't know if that happened or not. But no, by playfulness, it doesn't mean you have to play make-believe. You don't have to LARP or something. It means your attitude, having a playful attitude, which is to say letting go of outcomes and perfectionism, doing things just for the sake of doing them, for the pleasure and delight of doing them, and not getting wrapped up with perfection. That's what I mean.
So it's not like sitting and just sort of binge watching, you know, a show for 5 or 6 hours. It's something that feels more lighthearted and maybe more enjoyable.
Well, that's actually a really important distinction. So the reason I call it true fun with that true in front of it is that I realize that the feeling we get when we experience this confluence of playfulness and connection and flow stands in stark contrast to what I refer to as fake fun, which are activities such as binge watching shows till our eyes glaze over that feel good for a moment, but ultimately leave us feeling dead inside. They're the equivalent of junk food. They're marketed to us as fun. They taste pretty good when you first start. And then afterwards, you're like, what did I just do? You just feel gross.
Yeah. Tastes great, less filling.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't nourish us. True fun is nourishing. Fake fun leaves us feeling dead. So yeah. It's really important to tease out those differences on a personal level.
And you talked about connection as well. So it sounds like, in order to have true fun, does it happen in a group or in connection with other people?
Yeah, let me back up and say the way that I tested this definition was that I recruited this big group of people from my mailing list that I called the Fun Squad, because I wasn't sure. I was like, well, you know, I'm feeling this profound sense of joy in my guitar class, but maybe this is just me being me and overreacting to this emotional experience. I mean, we're basically just sitting around, you know, it's BYOB and we're playing songs on the guitar. Like, are other people feeling this? So I asked these thousands of people to share anecdotes from their own lives that they would describe as having been truly fun, just to see what they said, to see if the anecdotes they shared with me matched my proposed definition. I did not tell them the definition at first. When I read through those anecdotes, I found that the energy was very much the same, to the point that reading them brings a big smile to my face, but it also often moves me almost to tears because there's something very powerful about it. One thing that was really interesting about people's anecdotes is that in the vast majority of cases, they involved another person. And that surprised not just me, but also the people themselves, because I asked them explicitly, did anything surprise you about your answers? And a lot of people said, yes, you know, I'm a self-proclaimed introvert, but all the experiences I just told you about involved another person. So I came to conclude that this feeling of connection, while it can be connected to yourself or your physical body or the environment, things like that, in the vast majority of instances, it's with another person. And the difference between introverts and extroverts is the type of connection, a big group versus a small group, an intimate connection versus with a stranger. There's differences there, but the ultimate need for connection is still in place.
Yeah. And what about flow? What does that mean?
So flow is the psychological state where you get so engrossed in your present experience that you lose track of time. You know, the most quintessential example is an athlete in the midst of a game, but like right now is an example of flow because I'm totally focused on what you're saying and nothing else seems to exist. It's very different from what's known as junk flow, which is the more hypnotized state you get into when you binge watch shows for a long time and hours fly by, or you're just staring at your phone scrolling through social media. It's very active and engaged. And all three of those states are really great on their own. But when you put all three together, I believe that the kind of center of that Venn diagram is what I refer to as true fun.
Yeah. Let me invite our audience to join us in this conversation and maybe share some of your own true fun experiences, or maybe you've got some questions for Catherine about how to up your fun factor in a genuine way. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org, tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes, or just pick up the phone and call us, but don't scroll, 888-477-9499. We already have an email question here from Philip who asks, can we think of true fun in a similar sense as the pursuit of happiness, something that isn't static, and we should accept the absence of fun as critical for true fun's existence?
Ooh, I like we're jumping in straight to the philosophy. Thank you. Thank you, Philip. The thing that comes to mind first with that is just that I think that one of my favorite things about fun is that it helps us achieve happiness without having to aim too directly at happiness. Because in my mind, happiness is a very nebulous concept that, you know, if I asked you, Tracy, like, are you happy? We can then have a philosophical conversation for the next hour just about what happiness is. But if I ask you, did you have fun last weekend? You probably can tell me. And I think that that's a really crucial distinction, because I've noticed from the anecdotes people have shared with me that when we're having fun, we're invariably happy. It's a happy state. Mm-hmm. That means if you can figure out how to have more fun, you'll also end up being happier without having to focus directly on happiness. In terms of that particular question, I guess the question is, do you have to have an absence of true fun in order to appreciate it? I don't know. I will say that I think that right now, after the past 2 years and all that we've been through, we certainly do appreciate true fun more when it happens than we ever have before. But I think the trick to really appreciating it is to know how to recognize it and give it a name, so that you can really hone in on what produced it and put yourself in more situations that might generate it for you. Yeah.
Comment here from Rick, who says, I make a list each week of have-tos and want-tos and make sure that I get to both of them. Then I try to find like-minded people who enjoy the same things I do, and experiencing them with others seems to make for even more fun.
Yeah, Rick, I love that. That calls to mind something I talk about in the book. So the first half of the book makes this scientific case for fun, like what is fun and why it's actually important for us. And the second is a how-to plan for how to have more of it. And one of the things I recommend people do is reflect back on their own lives and call to mind a few experiences that they would describe as truly having been fun. And just let, you know, free flow, like brainstorm about that, or have a conversation with someone where you just talk about your respective experiences, and then notice if any themes jump out at you in terms of what you were doing and who you were with and where you were. And try to identify those themes, because I think of those as fun magnets. That is, the settings and the people and the activities that typically generate fun for you. They can't always be guaranteed to generate fun, because it's somewhat elusive, but yeah, most likely to. Because then you can take those fun magnets and put them on your schedule and prioritize them in a way that you can't just say, I'm going to have fun tomorrow. Like, that just feels impossible, like a burden to do. I feel bad just saying that.
It's another chore.
Yeah, it's a chore. But if I say I know that I normally or often have true fun with these people doing this thing, I can put that on my schedule. So I love that idea that Rick is proposing of the have-tos and the want-tos, because the want-tos are probably reflective of your fun magnets. And as he's experienced, if you prioritize those things, you end up feeling happier and you have more fun.
Yeah. Got to take a break in just about 45 seconds, but I want to read this comment from Lynn before that. Lynn says, I think of fun as unorchestrated and a spontaneous free response to anything. Also, it doesn't have to cost money.
Does not have to cost money. Thank you, Lynn. A lot of people think you got to have a lot of money to have fun. You don't. Someone just shared with me a beautiful example of just sitting on a park bench for 2 hours with his nephew, having true fun just by trying to catch falling leaves.
Yeah, simple as that. It doesn't have to be anything elaborate or anything like that. And as you said, the spontaneity of it, that it's something that you can't necessarily plan, but it sort of happens organically a lot of times.
You can set the stage for it, but you can't necessarily force it to happen.
Yeah, yeah, because then you're into fake fun and not true fun, which is a whole other issue. We have so much more to talk about as it relates to fun, particularly why it is essential for our mental and physical health. There's science behind all of that. We'll be talking more with Catherine Price about the power of fun when Radio Times comes right back. Stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscowane. And if you're just joining us, we are talking about fun. Yes, we are. The Power of Fun, specifically. It's the title of a new book by Catherine Price. You may remember her book, How to Break Up with Your Phone. Her new book is all about the power of fun, and the subtitle is How to Feel Alive Again. And after the last almost 2 years that most of us have had dealing with the pandemic and everything that has come about as a result of that, pretty good timing for a book about fun. We could all use a little bit more of it in our lives. So that's what we're talking about. If you'd like to join our conversation, maybe share some fun moments of your own, or you've got some questions about how to incorporate more fun into your life, you can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, or call us 888-477-9499. Catherine Price, there is an entire chapter in your book called Why You Feel Dead Inside And it addresses why so many of us have trouble recalling the last time that we really had that genuine, joyful, lose track of time kind of fun in our lives. Why do so many people feel dead inside, or at least struggle to remember the last time they really had fun?
Well, there's something looming over this conversation, which is COVID's certainly not helpful, guys. I actually signed this book contract in April 2020, so it was right in the midst of that first wave of lockdowns, and then proceeded to write it, I mean, over the next year. So I think right now the number one thing is just the endless pandemic. It's just, I mean, come on, cut us a break, please. Yeah. So that's happening, and all of the isolation and loneliness and restrictions and fear and anxiety are all blocking our ability to, or not totally blocking, I would argue, but certainly interfering with our ability to have as many opportunities as we might otherwise have for playfulness and connection and flow. But I think there's other reasons. One of the biggest reasons that it's hard for us to have that type of fun is that we're constantly distracted and turning to our screens, and we're really getting sucked into, as I was saying, what I refer to as fake fun, this idea that we're going to feel connected if we spend more time on social media, or that posting idealized photographs of our existence on Instagram is actually a representation of fun. But in reality, it often just leaves us feeling more vacant and empty and lonely than we did before we started doing it, which is one of the reasons I think it's so important to start to tease out the difference between true fun and fake fun. Because really, once you start to recognize fake fun and internalize how it does not make you feel good, it becomes a lot easier to cut back on it because you don't want to do it. And on the flip side, once you start to notice and appreciate the moments of playfulness and connection and flow in your life, even if they're small, the more you're going to want to experience because they feel so good. Yeah. In other words, once you get a taste of the good stuff, you're not going to want to waste your time on the waste of time that is fake fun.
Yeah. Doom scrolling loses its appeal somehow.
Loses its appeal. Also, we're such perfectionists. You know, adults are such perfectionists. We think we have to be our, I don't know, perfect airbrushed selves at all times. And we don't let ourselves just live our lives. We think that we have to perform them, whether it's on social media or in a work context or on a Zoom call. We've just spent 2 years staring at ourselves on Zoom calls. That is exhausting. So I think one of the best things we can do is turn away from the camera and just try to do things that we ourselves enjoy. Yeah. Do things that you get a kick out of.
You mentioned something in the book, and it may have even been a footnote, but it really caught my attention. And it was about this app that someone told you about that reminds you every day that you're one day closer to dying. And you wrote about how you debated whether you should download the app, but I would love to hear more about that. Did you download it? And what is that all about?
I am that app. I don't need that app. I remind myself every day that I'm going to die. It normally happens around 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to get back to sleep. So I certainly don't need my phone to do that for me. But the idea of the app is just to remind you ultimately what's at stake. You know, people ask me, like, why should I care about fun? I have many answers to that. But my first answer is because you're going to die. We're going to die. And I think that we need to enjoy our time on Earth. And we deserve to, is the other thing. And having fun does not mean that you're not a responsible person. It does not mean that you can't do work that will improve the lives of other people or improve the planet. You can be a good, responsible person and also enjoy your own life. And I think, and in fact, the more you're enjoying yourself, the more energy you're going to have to connect with and help other people.
I want to get to the science behind it in a minute and also to some ideas on how we can up our fun factor. But a couple of comments. An email from Paula says, contra dancing. It fits all the requirements of true fun. If you haven't tried it, try it. Flow, connection, and playfulness, even for this introvert.
I love that. I personally find that through swing dancing. I love swing dancing. One of the things I miss the most from the pandemic is the ability to do that. But I think that brings up an interesting point that some people out there are like, yes, contra dancing. Other people are like, what's contra dancing? It's a form of called dance that's kind of similar to square dancing. And then other people are like, I would never want to do that. That sounds horrible, which I think kind of as an example of how, while I would argue the definition of true fun is universal as a state of playful, connected flow, each of us finds it through different activities or different contexts. So what I find fun may not seem fun to you, and that's fine. You know, I think it's important to just recognize our differences so you can support other people in your life as they pursue their path to fun, but also carve out time for your own.
Yeah, there's not a specific formula for fun. It's going to vary from person to person, but there are some common elements that you can look for that constitute fun.
Yeah, well, I would say the formula is identify things that generate playfulness and connection and flow for you that put you into that state, and then prioritize those things.
Yeah. David says, George Bernard Shaw noted that we don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing.
I had thought that was Oliver Wendell Holmes, but now I need to double check that.
We'll have to.
Yes, but that is a wonderful quote that whoever said it, I completely agree with. I think it's definitely true. You know, we just think that play is just for kids, but adults out there, we need to be more playful. Yeah. Like, stop taking ourselves so seriously.
Well, so let's talk about the benefits of fun for those who are maybe not convinced or just feel like they're too busy to have fun, or that's something that's reserved for the weekend or for vacation. There is some real science behind the idea of being intentional about bringing more fun into our lives. What are the benefits?
Well, the biggest benefit that I always like to emphasize is that fun is fun. You know, ideally that would be enough for us all. Be like, oh, I should do that because it's really fun. But since I know how we all are, there actually are a lot of benefits. And I think one thing that's fascinating is that there actually has been little to no research done on the concept of fun, if you call it fun, for the reasons I alluded to earlier, namely that there's not a good agreed upon definition. However, if you think about fun as the confluence of playfulness and connection and flow, there's plenty of research on each of those three states, and each one of them has been proven to be very good for our emotional and our physical health. So just to go into a couple examples, one of the worst things we can do for our health is to constantly be stressed out, because when we're stressed out, it represents a chronically elevated level of a hormone called cortisol. So cortisol is a stress hormone. It's there to help us survive and respond to physical threats. So if someone's chasing you, you definitely want a surge of cortisol, because it will do things like spike your heart rate and your blood pressure and your blood glucose. Excuse me. But you don't want to have that elevated over time, because if you do, those same effects add up to bad health consequences, such as increased risks for things like heart disease and stroke and dementia, fertility issues, depression. I mean, the list goes on. Chronic stress, really bad for us. Guess what, everyone? We've been chronically stressed for a really long time now. So that means anything that reduces our stress levels doesn't just feel good, but it actually is good for us physically on a hormonal level. And connection, playfulness, and flow have all been shown to reduce stress, and therefore will, I think it is reasonable to assert, improve our chances for short and long-term health. I also always like to call out connection in particular. We all know that loneliness feels bad, but I don't think many of us really internalize how important connection is. So there's a lot of research that's been done into the physical effects of isolation and loneliness. And this is especially important considering where we are now in the global pandemic, where many of us are feeling very lonely and very isolated. So it doesn't just feel bad, it is bad for us. Loneliness and isolation affect us down to the level at which our genes are expressed. I found a great quote from one researcher that referred to loneliness in particular as being a fertilizer for other diseases. And there's another oft-cited study that compares the risks, the health risks of loneliness and isolation to those caused by smoking 15 cigarettes a day. 15 cigarettes.
Wow.
So all that is to say that anything we can do to boost our feelings of connection and reduce loneliness and isolation doesn't just feel good. It's really essential for our physical health. So I think those are two very strong reasons that fun should be at the top of our priority list, just from a physical health perspective. And there's plenty more reasons too.
Yeah. And there's no downside.
There's really no, like, I mean, I guess if you were just, you know, you cast aside every responsibility and abandoned your family and just went on a motorcycle tour of, I don't know, Bali or something. I don't even know how far you'd get with that. But anyway, you don't want to do that, or like, yeah, you could go too far, I guess. But in reasonable quantities, there is really no downside that I see of prioritizing fun.
Yeah, kind of can't go wrong. You're listening to WHYY. I am Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscow-Wayne. You're listening to Radio Times, and we're talking about fun with Catherine Price. Her new book is called The Power of Fun. A couple of things. Our producer, Debbie Bilder, did check on that quote and said it was indeed George Bernard Shaw. We don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. So thanks to Debbie for fact-checking that for us. Here's an email from Michelle who says, I'm having fun attending exercise classes for seniors twice a week. I know I'm doing something good for myself and I'm feeling good about it, being out with others and still staying safe by wearing my mask and having fun doing it.
I like that.
Yeah. We also asked some of our Facebook followers about the last time they had fun. Here is a sampling of their responses thus far. Mariana says, last summer I channeled my inner 9-year-old and spent hours, all caps, in the ocean with my daughter jumping over waves. It was so fun. Joya says, Sunday I saw A Swingin' Little Christmas with Jane Lynch at City Winery. And Maria says, over the weekend I took my kids out for dinner. I'm a single parent and one of my children has special needs, which makes restaurant trips difficult. We went early, got a seat in a corner facing a wall, and had a really good time. So there's just a sampling of some of our Facebook followers and their experiences with fun. And you've certainly gotten lots of samples as well, Catherine, from your fun squad that you mentioned earlier. And I wonder if you might, you know, share with us something that you learned from the fun squad or an experience that they shared with you that really moved you or stuck with you.
Sure. I mean, actually, that ocean one, I just totally got tears in the corner of my eyes. I just wiped one away. Anyway, I just had so many delightful experiences shared with me by people. I think one thing that stood out is that they didn't have to be deep or profound. It was things like just jumping in the ocean and allowing yourself to let go for a little bit and be present, not be distracted by stuff and be playful for that moment. People told me about things like going out in the rain with their grandfather with no raincoat and just getting totally soaked, and that stood out in their mind as an adult as a moment of true fun. Someone else told me about an experience where they redecorated their bedroom with their mother when they were, these were both things from childhood, but they weren't all from childhood. Anyway, they redecorated her bedroom as a pink Parisian oasis and spent the whole night just talking in funny accents and having fun together. And then someone told me about an experience going to Siberia, actually, after college, where they spent the whole afternoon with these Siberian orphans playing games and singing together. And even though they didn't speak each other's language and they didn't have many shared life experiences, they had this amazing afternoon together. And this person said they hardly ever talk about the experience because they hadn't had a word to describe it, but it was such a meaningful experience to them that they didn't want to cheapen it. But upon reflection, the word that seemed to describe it best was fun.
And it also shows that you don't even need language for connection.
No. Also, you can have fun with a dog, I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe cats, but definitely people brought up dogs. There's something, you know, dogs are masters at what is called play signals, which are little signals we show to other people that indicate we're in an open state of mind and we're open to being playful. I'm going to emphasize the full so people don't freak out about the play thing. And you know that how dogs do it when they bow down and then they wag their tails and show they're available to play. And just as a side note, in terms of the effects that some of our devices are having on our ability to have fun, one thing that's been researched is that, and it's totally obvious if you think about it, is that when we're constantly staring down at our phones, we're unable to make the eye contact with people that would be a play signal indicating that we are open to sharing a laugh about something or a little comment or starting a conversation. So that's one way I think that it's kind of getting in the way of this element of connection that could lead to fun.
Yeah. Catherine, one of the big ideas in your book is that our lives are the sum of what we pay attention to. You argue that attention may be the most valuable currency we have. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, that was something I thought about a lot when I was writing How to Break Up with Your Phone, is that ultimately our lives are what we pay attention to. You know, we only remember what we pay attention to, and we only experience what we pay attention to. And so ultimately, that means every time we make a decision in the moment about how to spend our attention, we're making a much broader decision about how to spend our lives. I would argue that it's even more important than time, because you can spend time with someone but not be with them because your attention is elsewhere. And we all know that does not feel the same. So that's what I mean when I say our lives are what we pay attention to. But what I realized and what inspired this book is that that's really just the first step to recognize your life as what you pay attention to. Once you realize that, you have this big question, which is, what do you want to pay attention to? And I decided that one thing I really wanted to pay more attention to was fun. And my own life has really dramatically changed for the better as a result.
Email here from Sarah, who says, why do you think that many times people feel that it's not okay to have fun? I have had many jobs, some great, some not so great, but the quality of the work being done was inevitably influenced by the ability of the people involved in a project to let go and have fun.
I think we've got a lot of blocks when it comes to fun. Part of it is what I was mentioning earlier about how we somehow think that if you're not, you know that bumper sticker that says, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. We feel like we always have to be outraged. And that always makes me outraged when I see that bumper sticker, because I'm like, I am paying attention, just not only to things that outrage me. So I think that the first step is to really internalize it's not a zero sum equation. We can have fun and also be good people, productive people. In fact, fun will make us more productive. It will make us better parents. It will make us better partners. It will make us better citizens and employees. It will boost us in all these other areas as well. So, there is a lot of research that's been done on how playfulness and, well, obviously flow because you're focused and connection that can actually make you more effective at work. If you're taking a break from first of all, you should take breaks. But if you take a break from the task at hand to go check your email, you're not going to actually be at all refreshed because you're just using the same area of your brain that's already tired. It's far more effective to take a break and do something that gets you into a totally different space. You know, for example, one of the effects of this book on my own life is that I've started now I'm taking drum lessons too, which I love. My brain explodes every time I do that. But I find that if I'm stuck on something I'm writing and I actually take a break and practice a drum exercise, I come back in a completely different and more productive and creative state than I would if I had spent that same amount of time checking my email.
What about nature, Catherine? And there's lots more questions and comments here from our audience that we'll get to, but in our minute or so left before we take a break, what about the power of nature to help us to have fun, to maybe put us in a better frame of mind, to help us with taking breaks, as you just mentioned? How important is that?
Being outside is really important just in general. It's so good that there's some researchers who refer to what they call outdorphins as a version of endorphins. I guess you could also have endorphins, which probably don't really exist. But, you know, there is something about being outside in nature that's been proven to be very good for our overall well-being. I'd also say, though, that there are some people who really find nature even more nourishing than others, just as there's some people who find contra dancing, you know, more nourishing than others. And that illustrates something I think of as the difference in our fun factors, which are characteristics that typically lead to fun for us. And some people, if you think about it, really, really derive pleasure from being outside. And so they should prioritize that even more than the rest of us who already should be getting up from our computer screens and going outside when we can, because it is good for our moods.
So much more to talk about. When we come back, we'll talk about how to increase our fun in our lives, how to be more intentional, and what are some ways to make sure that we're having more fun and getting all the benefits that come along with that. That plus your comments and questions when Radio Times comes right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain, and I don't know about you, but I am having fun in here today, and that's because I'm talking with Catherine Price. We're talking about her new book, The Power of Fun, How to Feel Alive Again. And my goodness, after almost 2 years of the COVID-19 pandemic, who couldn't use a little more fun in their lives? So the book is right on time, and apparently we have hit a nerve because we're hearing from so many of you who are sharing great ideas about how you have fun. Also, some great questions for Catherine. So if you'd like to be part of that conversation, you can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org, tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, or give us a call at 888-477-9499. Catherine, we've got a bunch of comments here from our listeners. First of all, Bethany tweeted us and said, "Gotta set the stage for more true fun in my life. Hashtag get off the phone."
Hashtag thanks, Bethany.
So there's Bethany. And we have another contra dancer in our listening audience today, Catherine.
I bet you have a lot of contra dancers that you are not aware of.
Who knew? There's a lot of them out there. But Kathy says, "I'm a contra dancer in the Lehigh Valley. So much fun. Social interaction. You can find contra dancing all over the U.S. and the world. I will confess, this is the first time I've heard of contra dancing, but apparently I'm behind the eight ball on this."
You know, your post-pandemic hobby.
I think I know how to have more fun now. I have to try contra dancing. Amanda says, I love this conversation, and I just want to add that one can connect with the world around them without other people. I take hikes with my dog, and when we can get into a flow where he's off his leash and we're both exploring the woods at our leisure, I have so much fun feeling like we're both enjoying the same activity, even though we have so much difference between us.
Just a few differences. No, I think that really speaks to one of the things that people, I call this big group of volunteers that I had helped me research this book, the Fun Squad. There was a question I asked about, like, let me know what the descriptors are of the experiences you just described to me. And one of the options I gave people was that the feeling of having a special shared experience. And that, along with laughter, those were the highest responses. So I think anything that produces a special shared experience is likely to also produce fun.
Yeah. Comment here from Thomas, who says, I added fun to my life and overcame some loneliness by adopting a stray cat a few years ago. I also like to collect leaves and make artwork with them.
There you go. The leaf theme. And apparently you can have fun with a cat. Thank you.
So there you have it. Yeah. Question here from David, who says, what role does addiction play in fun? Sometimes we do things too much because they're fun, and that can lead to addiction, like gambling, and then too much of it ultimately can lead to loneliness.
Yeah, so I think that's an example of how fake fun can be really tricky, you know, because it camouflages itself as true fun. And in fact, some of the same chemicals are involved in terms of our body's response, because both true fun and fake fun are going to trigger the release of a chemical called dopamine, which is our body's way of recording when a behavior is worth doing again. The issue or the problem being that our dopamine systems are non-discriminatory. So they will, if anything triggers dopamine, your brain's going to internalize that as something worth doing again, regardless of whether or not it is worth doing again. So I'd say the things that constitute true fun are worth doing again, because they bring us closer with other people. They have these positive effects that we're talking about. But if you do something that's been engineered to trigger dopamine's release deliberately, such as gambling, you know, slot machines are like our dopamine machines. Cell phones or smartphones are often referred to as slot machines that we keep in our pockets because they're so full of dopamine triggers. That's where you get into a dangerous zone where you're like, oh, yeah, this is fun. It feels fun at first. But then you quickly cross the line into it not being fun and in extreme cases leading to addiction. So I do think that's an important distinction to draw. Anything to which you can get addicted is probably not true fun in the sense that I'm referring to.
Well, you think about Facebook, right? And you post something and then you sit around and wait for the likes to roll in.
Likes are a dopamine trigger. The social affirmation, it's a form of a reward, just the same as the potential for, getting money from a slot machine. That's the reward you're waiting for.
Yeah.
Also, anticipation itself is a huge dopamine trigger. So you're sitting there anticipating whether or not you're going to get a like or whether or not those cherries are going to line up and give you a win. That's triggering dopamine. And unfortunately, that's reinforcing the idea that that's worth doing again and again, when, of course, if you actually think about it, it's not at all.
And then the flip side is, if you don't get the likes or you don't get all the cherries to line up, then that can take you to a very bad place.
Well, that's an interesting point, too. You end up with the anxiety that can result if you don't get what you're waiting for, if you get negative feedback, or just the FOMO, fear of missing out. So you get this really horrible cycle where you want the anxiety to go away. So what do? You check the device again. And what do you find waiting for you? Another dopamine trigger by design, because you will find a dopamine trigger, whether you know it or not, every time you look at your phone. And when you encounter that dopamine trigger, well, what does it do? It reinforces the idea that checking your phone is worth doing again and again and again. And then the cycle continues. So I think that prioritizing true fun is a way to break that cycle and get you to actually take back control of your life so you can spend your limited time on Earth on things that actually matter to you.
Yeah. So speaking of true fun, for those of us who need more fun in our lives, I'm asking for a friend, what are some ways that we can be more intentional about adding fun? I mean, you talked about certain things to look for. I'd love for you to expand on that for those of us who recognize that we need to have some more fun.
I mean, basically just contra dance. I think I could have summarized my whole book.
Bottom line.
Yeah, exactly. I should have just been a pamphlet. The first step is to understand this distinction between true fun and fake fun. And then, as we've been discussing, reflect back on your own life and call to mind some examples, some memories that you have that you would describe as really having been fun, and tease out some of the themes from that. Do ask yourself, like, who were you with? What were you doing? Where were you? You're trying to figure out if there are are settings or people or activities that really are strongly associated for fun with fun for you, your fun magnets, as I was referring to them. And then once you have that, concentrate on making some space in your schedule so that you can prioritize those things. And in many cases, that's going to require setting some better boundaries with your devices. But again, once you start to recognize that often our devices are sources of fake fun, it becomes easier because you will start to automatically reduce the time you spend on the fake fun once you get a taste of the good stuff. So once you identify some of the things that consistently are likely to generate fun for you, they won't ever be guaranteed to create true fun because true fun is an emotional experience. So I want to clarify that because it's not like you just have to spend all your time. Pickleball comes up a lot. Like you don't have to just like put pickleball on your schedule or some random hobby and just stuff it in there because that's going to make you feel pressured. But you want to set the scene for it, kind of like you'd set the scene for romance. And you can't force it, but you can light some candles.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do. But once you have identified some of these things that are the most likely to generate fun for you, get them on your schedule and protect that time and then take it from there. I'd also say one thing I really encourage people to do as we enter whatever phase of the pandemic we are entering is to pay attention to moments of playfulness and connection and flow that already exist in your life, no matter how small, like a little smile you share with someone or a moment of laughter, so that you can actually appreciate and benefit from those moments. And an easy way to make that more concrete is to adopt what I refer to as a delight practice. It's an idea that was inspired by Ross Gay, who's a poet who wrote a book called The Book of Delights, for which he wrote an essay every single day for a year about something that delighted him, which is crazy, but amazing. I recommend that book. But basically what Ross Gay suggested is when you notice something that delights you, you stick a finger in the air and you say out loud, delight.
Wow.
And it's simple, and I can tell you it makes a huge difference. I have heard from so many people about what a difference a simple delight practice has made for them. And it's even better if you share it with someone else, although you also can definitely do it on your own. But just the other day, I spoke to a friend whose dad had had a stroke, and he's paralyzed on the left side of his body. She's going through a really rough time, and her mother obviously is as well. And she and her mom have started a delight practice, and they share delights with each other. They send each other text messages of things that delight them. And she said it's been so helpful for their resilience and their feelings of connection during this hard time. And I thought it was a beautiful example of how, you know, fun isn't just fun. It's also really powerful.
Yeah. Very healing.
Yes.
Yeah. Catherine, it sounds like in some ways, maybe increasing our fun quotient may require getting out of our comfort zone. Like you talked about taking the guitar class and then drum classes. And for some people, that might be a very easy thing. And for other people, it might take some self-talk to get them to take the steps to go out and try something new like that.
I think it does take self-talk. That's interesting. I used to be very self-critical, and my husband's really helped me through the years become less so. But the thing that's making me smile as you say that is my daughter has just been learning how to do cartwheels in the past week. Like last Sunday she couldn't, and now she's doing one-handed cartwheels. It's amazing.
Wow.
But I heard her self-talk. She was saying, you know, keep trying. You got to keep trying. You can do this. You can do it. Keep trying. And I was like, wow, you're teaching me so much just as a six-year-old. So I would say, yeah, internalize that self-talk and try to laugh at yourself. It's fine to be bad at something. There's a great book I love called Beginners by Tom Vanderbilt, in which he extols the benefits of being an adult beginner. And he basically says it's okay to stink at something, like embrace that. And the example that comes to mind from my own life is I took up rowing lessons on the Schuylkill. And wow. As people in your audience know, that's not a river
that's
you
necessarily. That's no small thing, yeah.
Oh, but it's also not a river you want to swim in. And I had this experience on a fall morning where it was pouring out. For some reason, my coach and I still went out. There was no one else on the river, which anyone who lives near here knows is very ominous. And long story short, my oar slipped out of my hand and I ended up just doing a full somersault straight into the Schuylkill.
No.
Chrissy's like, oh, how am I in the studio with this person really getting something right now? But, you know, and I guess I could have criticized myself and I could have been frustrated and mad, but I just found it hilarious. It's like, this is so absurd. So I actually made my coach, like, first thing I was like, you have to take a picture for my husband. And we put it on our Christmas card. So I think having, I don't know, like just trying to laugh at yourself because it makes such a difference. And I think we all have the capacity to do that a little bit more, you know, just a little bit more.
And you made a memory you'll never forget.
Yes.
And one that will make you smile every time you think about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Some comments here from our listeners. One from Vivek, who says, I learned from one of my teachers that our lives are never for ourselves. They are for others. What we do always impacts others. And fun is a classic example. Having fun is always infectious. It improves the mood for everyone around us.
I love that. I love that statement, because I think a lot of times people assume the opposite, that it's selfish. And instead, there is a real beauty to the fact that it can bring joy to other people, too. If you have a fun, if you're having more fun, the energy you're going to exude is going to affect other people. And I was actually just thinking this morning, just, you know, reading the headlines about the latest variant and everything, I was thinking of how burned out people in healthcare in particular must be right now. And I was thinking that one way to have fun, though it sounds kind of odd, is just to do nice things for other people, because it anything, again, anything that promotes playfulness, connection, and flow is going to bring you a sense of true fun and also will be great for other people. So if there's a way to do something playfully nice or connect with someone who you know is really struggling or is burned out, I mean, that's, I think, a great example of how prioritizing fun can help both you and other people.
Yeah.
So I just invite people to brainstorm what might be possible with that.
Well, and how necessary in a time when we're so divided on so many things, the idea of doing something for somebody else and sort of contagious fun is almost rebellious in a way.
Well, rebellion, I'm glad you used that word, because that was one of my favorite parts of the book that was inspired by these anecdotes people shared with me, is that often there was this spirit of playful rebellion running through them, of doing something that just slightly broke the mold of like what a supposed serious adult is supposed to do, just something silly. And so I actually included that as a whole chapter in the book, the concept of rebellion, doing something just for yourself, you know, like instead of listening to an educational podcast, like listening to a song you love when you were a teenager and just singing along at the top of your lungs. Yeah. And I think also the more we can share that with other people, the closer we become, because when you're having fun with someone, you don't see political differences. You don't see your differences in general. You're connecting as human beings. And I think that especially now, anything that brings out our shared humanity is essential for us to prioritize.
Along those lines, Christine says, I love to laugh and make other people laugh. I have found it is so necessary to have fun when you live with diseases or disabilities or illnesses. But the fatigue that goes with such problems makes it so very much harder to make and live that time for fun, as there are literally fewer able hours in the day to get what has to be done, that the time plus energy left for enjoyment becomes harder to harvest. When I had a dog, I was guaranteed to have at least little bits of fun every day. So something there about kind of having the time and energy, especially if you're battling health challenges, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Tracy and I were talking about, I have type 1 diabetes. And so, I mean, right now I've got a Gatorade on the desk right now in case I've got a low blood sugar while we talk. And I essentially have to, well, I am. I'm my own pancreas at this point, because I would die without insulin. And anytime I take insulin, I literally could kill myself if I take too much. So I hear you, you know, living with health challenges of any kind is really challenging. But I will say that I can actually see a reflection in my own blood sugar if I'm having more fun, which might sound crazy, but a lot of it has to do, again, with this cortisol. Cortisol actually spikes your blood sugar. So I found that prioritizing my own fun, I think, has a subtle effect on my blood sugar levels themselves. And I'd also say, I think that that's a really important point to bring up, because many people, again, think that you got to, you know, spend a whole weekend doing something, quote, for fun, or go someplace or do something really out of the ordinary, which can be really helpful because novelty is conducive to fun. But we also need to think more locally and in a more focused way about what we could do with all of our constraints, just to bring a little bit more of a lighthearted attitude, not in a way that makes it feel like a burden. That's not what we're trying to do, but just notice things that bring you a little tiny bit of lightheartedness, focus in on those and see if you can amplify them.
Yeah. Catherine, you've mentioned guitar lessons, drum lessons, rowing on the Schuylkill. You have a young daughter. What is the most fun that you have ever had, or what is true fun for you?
I don't know what I'd say the most fun I've ever had is, because I've had a lot of fun, I'm grateful to say. But I'd say two things that consistently generate it for me and that are fun magnets for me are swing dancing, because some of the things that tend to generate fun for me are physicality and movement and music. And then music, playing music with friends. So I definitely emotionally survived the pandemic with the help of a particular group of friends whom I play music with regularly. And I think this also speaks to, or is an example of another suggestion I'd have for people, is that if you figure out something that generates true fun for you and it's at all possible to do safely during this winter and this pandemic, make it happen. So we figured out a way to keep playing music in the middle of the winter by buying really heavy coats and getting hand warmers and standing outside 15 feet apart and playing in 30-degree weather. And it helped us to emotionally survive.
Yeah, it worked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Want to mention the website before we go for people who are looking to have more fun.
Yes, howtohavefun.com. And you can sign up for my newsletter and learn more about the book.
Yeah, that is as easy as it gets. Howtohavefun.com. There are quizzes there. There's lots of information if you're looking to have more fun. That's the place to find it. Catherine Price, thank you so much for your time and for having fun with us here at WHYY on Radio Times.
Thank you so much. And thanks to all the listeners for the anecdotes. That brought me a lot of joy.